there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with a rejection!
Welcome to the Chase Down on Almighty Baller Radio, part of Dash Radio. I'm Justin Rowan with my co-host Carter Rodriguez. We are finals bound, Carter. How you feeling?
Better than you. You did not sound great.
Thank you so much.
Justin had a fun night last night, Memorial Weekend. We were like, we have a group chat with Justin and Chris Manning of Fear the Sword as well, site manager, and Justin. We had asked Justin his opinion on something via GChat, and he's like, yeah, sure, that sounds good. I'm hammered right now. So it's good to see that you're back to 100%. And by that, I mean, what percentage are you at right now?
Oh, I'm firing on all cylinders.
So like 60%. Got it. There was a stretch where every time I came on Chris's podcast, I had just gotten hammered the night before, and I really don't drink that much, so I don't know what I don't know how that lined up. But I think Chris was starting to get concerned that I was like a total degenerate. But really, I'm not.
I really appreciate you that you're like dragging me over the coals right now.
Every time,
like
every time you drink the night before, I think it's important to make fun of you about it.
This is productive already.
Yep. Finals. They're here. Starters, their podcast, or I was listening to the drop of the Starters, and you know, like, I mean, as far as like in, you know, deep analysis, it's not really like the show you go to, and I still got myself stressed out with them talking about this. I was listening to them just like breaking down what they thought might happen, and I just like suddenly got like crushed with a wave of anxiety.
The anxiety is a big deal. Like, to me, when I was breaking down the series in my article for Fear the Sword, I was, like, getting amped, but then I'm also like, oh, God, even if the Cavs do everything right, is this going to be enough? My assumption is yes, but we're really talking about two historically talented teams, so it's really going to come down to execution, a couple breaks here and there. The anxiety is killing me.
I just know how small my threshold for any adversity is going to be. Like, the first, like, if they're up 6 points and Draymond blocks a shot and flexes, I'm going to be a puddle on the floor. I'm not equipped to deal with the anxiety of this. Like the first backbreaker three, the first 10-point loss. And, like, I guess let's just dive in right there. Like, last year, we had 6 blowouts, 1 close game. High drama all the way through. This wasn't a boring series. Like, sometimes people, I've seen some people say that, like, oh, like, actually, that series wasn't very good. until game seven. I was like, no, it was a great series. It was dramatic as hell.
Yeah.
It was just the games ended in double-digit margins. Do you think that happens again this year where each winner just feels like cataclysmic because it's like a 20, 25-point win or even like 15 to 20?
I think there's going to be at least three or four of those. I don't know how long the series is going to go. My assumption is it's going to go at least six games. So I guess by saying three or four, I believe at least half the series will be blowouts, at least with the final score. It just seems like the margin for error is so small with the Cavs. If they do what they need to do to win, I think they win in a big way. But if things start to break down and the defense is scrambling and it's just one of those nights, it can get out of hand in a hurry. So for that reason, I do think that there is going to be at least a few blowouts.
So the way I keep thinking about it was, and I kind of quietly complained to you about G-Chat about this, is like the way people talk about this series, it's like, okay, Draymond gets suspended, Barnes goes cold, and if those guys had just, you know, the way people talk about it is like, if Barnes hit two more threes, they would have won the series. And it's like, would they have? Like, their three losses, three of their four losses, they got their teeth kicked in. Like,
yeah, they're basically just talking about game seven.
So to me, I think a big part of it is, I think that the way that people seem to think the Cavs won last year will probably be the way they have to win this year. I think it would be 3-4 close crunch time wins and maybe two or three tough losses where they kind of get maybe run off the floor once or twice.
Yeah.
Because the Warriors have no crunch time reps with this core.
Am I wrong for thinking if the Cavs are going to have a blowout win, it's going to be game one?
Yes, I think so, because I think that the Warriors are a little bit ready, and I just think LeBron likes to take his time to figure stuff out. I know that kind of hasn't been the case this year, but I think in general that's been the case.
All right, so hear me out. The Warriors haven't really been tested at all in the playoffs, partly due to the competition and partly due to injuries, but like the Spurs without Kawhi Leonard and Tony Parker, that they just got to walk through that series. And when you combine that with 9 days off, I really feel like the Cavs are coming in with an advantage. There's going to be some rust. They haven't had to execute in a close game all playoffs.
Yeah, even against the Spurs, they weren't executing that well. Like, the Spurs, like, kept getting it within 10-12, and then they just kind of turn it up again.
Right, and they keep playing, like, this very turnover-prone basketball, which is one of their weaknesses. So I really feel like the opportunity is there for the Cavs to come out and kind of make a statement in Game 1. If they come out sharp, I think that's going to be a win, and even a big win feels possible.
True or false, the Cavs have to win one of the first two games at Oracle to win the series.
My gut says true, but at the same time,
my gut said that last year too.
Right. Like,
in fact, I thought they had to win game one team last at any year. Point. Yeah, I thought they had to win game one last year, just because I didn't want them to have to win four out of five or four out of six games.
And you also wanted that for your anxiety, so that you get that win right off the bat and you don't have to worry even more during game two.
Yeah, but my anxiety also doubled once they lost game one in blowout fashion. But I don't know. I think that they do, because I think their margin for error is smaller this year. Like, I think you have to take one of those first two games so you don't have to win four out of five. Four out of five is brutal against this team.
Yeah, especially when you don't have home court advantage.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm not sure like how much home court matters, just because I think the Cavs are very comfortable winning at Oracle at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Warriors don't care either.
But at the same time, like it's somewhat a factor.
Yeah, it's a factor for sure. It's just, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how these first two games go. I think that each of these teams thinks it's going to be easier than it's going to be. Is that really fair to say? Yeah, I do.
Huh.
I think I get the impression. I feel like the Cavs quietly think that they have their number.
The Cavs definitely seem confident.
I think the Warriors think that they should have won last year and then added Kevin Durant. So I think that they think that it's going to be easier than it is. Like, I think they know it's going to be tough, but I don't think either is entertaining the possibility of losing the series. Whereas yeah, I don't that, know if that was the case last year.
I definitely agree with.
Obviously they're confident, but I think it goes slightly beyond just like believing in yourself. I think they think each team thinks they're better than the other team. For sure.
Which is awesome. If you listen to the Cavs, they seem so confident. LeBron's trying to downplay everything, but at the same time, he's kind of got that like LeBron laser focus, and he's wound up. Like, you can tell he's very excited for the series to start, and I love it. Like, when we're at round three of this series or of this matchup, what's shaping up to be one of the best NBA rivalries, it's fun that both teams feel like they can win. Both teams feel kind of slighted. Both teams are like just ready to go. I'm so excited for this series. I think it's going to be fantastic. I just want a close series. Like, I'll be able to live with a loss, but if the Cavs just get stomped, and we've talked about this before, that's a bad aftertaste for what's been a not great playoffs.
Agreed. I think that, well, first off, Warriors, if you're betting specific series outcomes, Warriors in five, last I checked, was the favorite. It was plus 250. I think the next closest was plus 300. So, I mean, it's very possible. And I mean, and that's kind of how this series is going to work anyway, is that the length of the series won't necessarily tell me how competitive it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because very well, if we have five close games, the numbers could just break one team's way in those five, in the four of those five games. Like, that's kind of like the thing about, you know, where the metrics come in that kind of say that close games oftentimes are a little more high variance, just because it's, you know, it's the whole make or miss league thing, right?
Right, right. If someone has a hot hand, it can change the complexion of a game if you just hang around. And I think you're right. Like, that's what it's going to take for if the Cavs are going to win the series, they're going to need at least a couple games where they just hang around and steal it, like they did on the Christmas Day game.
Question: another true or false? I'm throwing a lot of them at you.
I like it.
True or false? This is the best rivalry in NBA history, and we're watching it unfold.
Ooh.
Live.
Man.
Because the correct really answer hurts. Is yes.
Yeah.
Or true. don't answer a true or false question with yes. That's not how it works.
It really hurts that the first round of this finals matchup was so kind of one-sided because of the injuries.
It still went six games, though.
Yeah, it was such a great finals, though. Like, LeBron did absolutely everything he could.
I think it's true, because the fact of the matter is this: we're probably going to see this at least once more, right? I mean, it would be stunning if it's not next year, even if it's not four in a row. Like, the odds are we will see this again. So we'll have four matchups. Bird and Magic only played three times in the 80s.
Yeah,
he was spread out over several years, so it felt more omnipresent, which is what I think the Lakers Celtics in the 80s had, the Bird Magic rivalry in the 80s had. But right. Like, we've already had the volume.
Yeah, you know what? And there's definitely a good case for it. If this does end up being another historically good finals, then I think the answer is a clear yes.
And like, I think also, like, you have all the factors that make a rivalry interesting. Like, you've got the kind of the rich, like, the cultural divide is huge, that Silicon Valley versus the Rust Belt. That's like,
I was told on Twitter recently that the Warriors are an example of how a small market team can excel in the NBA.
Yeah, whatever. Like, so it's Silicon Valley versus Rust Belt, which, like, I know, like, a lot of those things are kind of played out, like Hicks versus Knicks, but like, you can't tell me it doesn't factor into the way fan bases feel. It just does.
Yeah.
You've got LeBron versus Steph. You've got the potential greatest of all time going against the great, potentially the great, most talented team of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You've got LeBron versus Steph. You've got the poor kid from Akron, the physical freak, versus the rich kid whose dad played in the NBA and is the best shooter in history. So like their styles are very contrasting.
Right.
You've got a great villain in Draymond. A great, you know, loudmouth, and I think even Warriors fans would admit he plays the villain role really well. He's a great heel.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
The personalities are there. The cultural divide is there. The talent level is there. We're watching two of probably the most, two of the top, like, 10 talented teams in NBA history going.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And like, that matters, teams are that good, too.
I don't know if you've seen the Draymond interview about this, but he was asked about the Warriors having an easy road, and he's like, the league has more talent than it's ever had. There's so many great teams out there. And like, he basically, his conclusion was that the Cavs and Warriors are just that much better than the league, than the rest of the league, even though everyone's more talented than they've ever been.
Like, yeah. Yeah. These are, I mean, these teams would wash almost every other team in NBA history.
How many teams from the 2000s? How many championship teams from the 2000s would have a chance against either of these teams?
Like, I still think people undervalue the 2001 Lakers.
Yeah, it's the Shaq and Kobe Lakers.
That team was so good. That team was so good. The mid-2000s were not great. Those Spurs teams, I don't think could hang. I mean, they could hang, but I don't know if they'd win. I mean, it's like one of those things where it's really hard to say in absolutes, but I just think, when you're looking at the totality of this rivalry, the disdain between the two fan bases and the teams. Like, I know that, you know, Draymond's partnered with LeBron, all that stuff, but like, I mean, they still like don't like each other on the court. Like, there's on court disdain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I just think that this rivalry is so good, and you know, we're gonna see them play in at least one more finals, probably more. I mean, if we have five finals in the decade with the same two teams.
Man.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, it'll be like one of those things where, like, we'll be telling our kids about how crazy these wars used to be. Mm-hmm. And, like, the only way that I think this doesn't end up being considered an all-time great rivalry is if, for some reason, LeBron gets old really quick, like, out of nowhere, and the Warriors roll them this year and maybe the year after.
Mm-hmm.
Like, last year's finals.
So it would need two bad finals.
Yeah, last year's finals can't be an outlier.
Right.
Where the Cavs, like, the plucky Cavs stole one. That can't be, like, the historical story, or it's not the greatest rivalry ever.
Yeah.
Because I think we all pretty much agree that, like, the Celtics and Lakers in the 80s, which I think is the gold standard for NBA rivalries, they were on equal footing. They were the same level, and they just traded haymakers back and forth.
Man, if the Cavs actually win this, though, like, holy crap. You go from beating the 73-win team to beating that same team with Kevin Durant.
I mean, I've got people in Chicago, people who hate LeBron with all of their being because he has torn their heart out so many times.
Yep.
And they're saying, well, that guy's going to be the... He's going to be right. He's going to be equal to Jordan in their eyes if they win this series.
Man,
like that's what's really like gotten me shaken up. And I don't know if you want to go too deep into the GOAT conversation, but it's pretty prominent right now. And I kind of had a thought, and I wanted to hear what you thought about it.
Okay, is it going to be in true or false format?
It will not be. This will just be in.
I just wanted to prepare myself.
Hold on. I'll make it true or false. True or false. We determine who the GOAT is, not through actual resume, not through their stat line, not through their rings, but primarily via the cult of personality that they generate, the amount of attention and interest that they garner. Like in the resume matters, but there's a reason Kareem is not in the one or two discussion anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think he inspires people to argue or like inspires their attention. Like Jordan, like revolutionized the way we talk about basketball.
Yeah, I think that
is there something to this cult of personality factor that I think that people aren't factoring in enough.
Yeah,
my question.
I think I think that's a big, big part of it. Like, even when you look at the history of the NBA, Magic and Bird obviously took, they took like basketball off of time delay. They made the game more prominent. And then Jordan really brought it to that next level. So I think when you look at a lot of the beat writers that came up that that time, that are now national guys like Michael Wilbon, like everyone that loves basketball has fond memories and associates where the league is now. They attribute that to Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan brought the league that they love to that point. So I think
is it fair to say that LeBron James has brought this league to where we love? Has he done the same thing in this era? I think it's fair to say that he has.
I think he has elevated the status of the league. As much as people complain about his decision making, wherever he goes, eyeballs go, the ratings go up. I don't know if it's exactly the same degree, and I think that's hard to quantify, but I think that's absolutely a factor, especially when you look at how national guys view Jordan, because at this point, it's mythological, like how Jordan is viewed.
I agree. I also think, like, in terms of the way the league behaves, it changed because of LeBron. Like, if Jordan helped turn an entire generation of players into marketers, LeBron has turned a generation of players into their businessmen. Into businessmen. Their agency, their personal agency is greater than ever. And I think that LeBron is a big part of that. As much as, you know, the both of us probably hated the decision at the time.
Yeah.
And the way that he, you know, like, and a lot of people have, you know, chafed at the way he's taking control over his situations in his career. Like, that's, I think, going to become the new standard of how the best NBA athletes behave. I mean, look at Chris Paul, who became the president of the Players Association to help negotiate this new extension and to change the over 35 rule.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these guys are taking control of their own lives more than they ever have. And I think that's LeBron's real impact on the business of basketball. And I think Jordan's impact on the business of basketball is part of the reason he's so mythologized. It's not just the on-court stuff.
Right. Yeah. He laid the groundwork for a lot of what these athletes are doing now. And LeBron really has taken it to the next level. And not just from a business aspect, but also being outspoken. Like, I think we're seeing more and more socially conscious athletes. And he did a lot of the pioneering of that, at least in the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, we've come a long way from Republicans buy sneakers, too. You know, I don't know. I just think it's really interesting the way he's pushed the game forward. And I think that's a big part of determining the GOAT. And I also think a big part of that conversation is just, it's as simple as, do most people think it? Mm-hmm. Like you could comfortably make a case that Kareem should be above MJ. You really could.
Yeah.
He was amazing for like 400 years.
His Bucks stats are ridiculous.
Nobody bothers to make the case for the most part because it's just been agreed upon. There's so many people. When I talk about like a consensus for agreeing on the GOAT, it's not everyone on Earth thinks it as much as is the accepted terminology.
It's kind of funny that when you look at the GOATs in sports, it all seems to come from the same era prior to rule changes and things like that. Like, it was a different game too. And I think it's so hard to compare eras in the NBA, even when you're going from Jordan to LeBron, who, like, LeBron basically came in right at the end. Like, there wasn't a gap. When you're talking about not being able to wall off the paint and bring zone and help defense, like if LeBron's guarded one-on-one and that's what you're forced to do, that becomes really difficult. I think Jordan, if he had modern technology and was playing in a modern game, he would find ways to be better as well. Like there's so many factors that go into this. And like, even if you look in different sports, like in hockey, Wayne Gretzky's considered the GOAT. But again, that's almost right at that same Jordan era. He helped bring the league to prominence. He helped expansion down south when he went to LA. Like it seems to follow that trend, and the cult of personality is a consistent factor when you analyze who the GOAT in each sport is considered.
I think that cult of personality and then just the general feeling determines it so much more than, you know, there's a lot of people who say, oh, if LeBron gets to 6 rings, then he can. I was like, I don't really think that's the criteria. Like, and ultimately it's pretty meaningless. You know, I think it was Curtis Harris that was saying yesterday, like, I just don't think there is a GOAT. I just think it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And I think there's certainly something to that. This is just for fun. This is just cultural. It's not about, you know, it's not like we have an award called the GOAT Award that we hand out.
Yeah.
Like it's all, you know, nebulous and unformed. But I think that the fun part is that, you know, like when LeBron truly considered the GOAT, it will just be assumed, you know, it'll be this thing where there will be a few people that say otherwise.
Right.
But if it ever truly happens, it'll just be that thing where it's like, yeah, LeBron's the greatest player ever. And people don't challenge you on it. Like nobody challenges you on Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is fun. True. Anyway, sorry. Back to the series. you said something really interesting in your preview piece about how the Cavs can beat the Warriors. And I really encourage everyone to go read it because I think it's one of the best preview pieces I've read so far for the finals.
Thank you.
You talked about testing the Warriors in the pick and roll. And last season, Andrew Bogut, you said, finished in the 71st percentile.
Yeah.
Defending the roll man. This year, Zaza Pachulia is in the 18th percentile. He's been really useful for this team, but not guarding the pick and roll. Now, I think that they're not going to want to put Draymond on Kevin Love because I think they're going to want him to play free safety.
I agree.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Especially without an elite rim protector. So that means I think Zaza Pachulia will be guarding Kevin Love.
See, I think it's going to be Durant.
Well, who does Zaza guard when he's out there?
Tristan, I guess.
Well, then Draymond has to guard, and he can't be a center fielder.
Yeah, that's true.
Man. So if you want him to play free safety, you have to put him on Thompson.
Hmm.
So I think that whoever Zaza is guarding, especially if he's guarding Kevin Love, Love should be able to feast in that matchup on pick and pops.
Oh, yeah. Pick and pops, spot ups, off ball movement. Like Kevin Love should not have an issue scoring on Zaza Pachulia. That's one of the reasons why I think Love is actually going to be a factor in this series. Like,
yep.
The methods that they used to shut him down in the past, which is obviously primarily Draymond Green, it's not the best defensive strategy that they can implement when you consider the other options. Like
now, I think they're just going to go centerless a lot.
What's that?
I think they're going to go centerless a lot.
You really think so?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Mike Brown is a little bit more traditional, so right. maybe he doesn't. But like JaVale McGee, I don't think has a place in this series. I know Warriors fans do, but I think he's going to get torched on the other end.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like he struggled defending the pick and roll as well. He didn't have enough possessions to register for the season. Like so, I couldn't say what percentile he's in, but he's really struggled defending the pick.
Yeah, he's just not a smart defender. And like if you put a shooter out there, he's not going to be able to cover them in space. And I don't know. I just think that's the advantage. Is every time Curry and Pachulia. I think David West is going to get a lot of minutes in the series.
Yeah.
Because he's a little bit more mobile than the other centers.
I agree.
But I think every second Pachulia and Curry or Curry and McGee are on the floor together, their two men are going to be running a pick and roll.
This is going to be such a high-scoring series. Like I'm just not sure it will because
of the pace.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Like, but
I think it's going to be a high offensive rating series.
Yeah,
but it's hard. It's definitely super hard to figure out because these teams have scored so much. But in the past, like I think the Warriors didn't get to 100 points 3 times.
Man.
In that series last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And their offense was, I mean, not quite as powerful, but still really powerful. I don't know. I just think it's going to be really interesting to figure out how capable Mike Brown is of adjusting. That has not been his strength in the past. So I think the Cavs have a real advantage in terms of game planning with Lou. And like,
it would be great if after all the playoff series that Mike Brown had costed the Cavs because of a lack of adjustments, that he gifts them a series.
My brother, while we were driving to my parents' house, I'm in Ohio for the weekend, while we were driving to my parents' house, he was bitching about how Mike Brown didn't adjust in the Magic series in 2009. Like, he's still not let go.
I don't think any series is going to hurt me more than 2009 did.
No. That was so frustrating. I don't know. I just think that's the advantage is I don't think Brown is capable of making the big swings. That said, Brown has more chess pieces to work with than Lou.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. He's got more, but I think every second Livingston's on the floor, Korver's on the floor, and I think that's a win for the Cavs.
Yep.
It's just going to be a fascinating series. I cannot freaking wait, Justin.
DeAndre Liggins played 22 minutes in the Christmas Day game. He had 0 points. Man.
Did great on Steph, though.
He picked him up full court. But JR is a better defender, and he actually brings offense and playmaking. And you don't completely ignore him on the defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely true.
Amon Shumpert was the backup point guard.
Will he play over under 23 minutes a game in this series?
Going to have games under 23 minutes. He's going to have games where he plays more than that. And he's going to have a couple, 10, 15-minute games, I think.
I think that they're going to guard Durant with... I think they're going to run more lineups that feature Shump and JR than they did last year.
Hmm.
Where one of those guys gets the Durant assignment.
I think we're going to see a fair amount of Kevin Love at the five.
I agree.
Especially
they're averaging like 1.48 points per possession with him at center this playoffs. It's like a layup every single time.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like I think Lou found something with putting Kevin Love in that bench lineup in place of Channing Frye. Like that lineup's just so damn hard to defend. It's ridiculous.
I don't know. I think Lou is going to try to give LeBron as many breaks off of Durant as he can. I think that's kind of my thesis statement here.
Mm-hmm.
Is because the more he's on, it was like last year they had stretches where LeBron was guarding Clay, and I was furious about it because it's a waste.
Yeah, because he can't play free safety at all.
He moves so much off ball. LeBron doesn't want to fight through screens, and it's a lot of work to do that. And then he couldn't go help.
Yeah.
So I think that LeBron is really good. He's the best option on Durant, but the best option for the Cavs defense is to put someone like JR or Shump on him, if possible, to put LeBron on Iggy. I think LeBron's going to spend a lot of time on Iggy, and he's going to spend a lot of time on Livingston. I think he's going to spend a lot of time on Draymond.
He's going to spend a ton of time on Draymond, I think.
They need Draymond to miss threes in this series.
Oh, God, that's going to be so huge.
If he shoots 43% on 4 or 5 attempts a game, I think they're cooked.
Yeah, it would be really tough to overcome that unless Steph or Clay unless just it's a game misses seven a bunch of open and shots.
Everyone goes cold except for Draymond.
I agree. I think JR is going to see a lot of time on Durant. Like when you look at what he did against Paul George, and those are two players of
pretty similar players, actually.
Yeah, they're really similar players when it comes to physical profile, what they can do. The way he was able to kind of affect his base, I think that's something that's been successful against Durant in the past, and I think that's going to be something that could work for the Cavs.
Over under 2.5 Shumps, where he strips him on the going up for the jumper on the turnaround.
Oh,
on Durant.
Over.
Because he's going to get some time on Durant. He's going to go for that swipe. I don't know how that's not in the scouting report in the playoffs. Because that guy, every time Shump has been posted up in American history, he has swiped down when they turn around.
He needs to have a big defensive series. If he plays like he did defensively in 2015, like, that's going to make such a big difference.
Yep, they have to be so smart. I'm just wondering what defense they're going to go with here. I mean, it's going to be so hard to figure it out.
I think Kyrie's going to spend time on Steph.
I think he is, too.
I think they're going to play it straight up. I think they're going to trap. I think he's going to get that assignment because you just need... You need JR on either Clay or Durant. Like, you need to use those guys elsewhere. And I think they're going to play Kyrie on Steph straight up. They're going to try to trap him as much as possible and get the ball out of his hands. But
force some turnovers.
Yeah, Kyrie's just going to have to step up.
Yeah, it's a scary series because so much of it is just like asking a player to be better than they normally are.
It really does come down to that.
And, like, they're going to do that with Tristan guarding Draymond. They're going to say, Tristan, I know this is a hard matchup for you. I know that he is really, really good. You're going to have to just be better on defense than you normally are. You just have to be because that's your job. And that's scary. Like, but that's the thing about this Cavs team, and we've talked about it a lot, is they have, you know, 5, 6, 7 players that all get better in the playoffs. And yeah, that's what makes this team so valuable, is they've got guys who get better, not worse. And when that's happening, you can have series like this where we're asking, where you're asking more than they normally give, and they can give it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the Cavs have had a lot of internal growth from last year. Like, LeBron, Kyrie, Love, and Tristan are all much better players than they were at this time last year.
Totally agree.
This is going to be such a fascinating series. It's
going to be awesome. I just hope it's awesome. I'm stressed and I'm anxious. My heart rate. I should probably not be on Twitter during the games. Because I'm going to be a wreck.
I've contemplated just kind of.
Mute me on GChat.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah, you're going to hate me on GChat.
You're going to be tough. You're going
to
be tough.
I'm not even going to talk to Chops on GChat.
I'm going to have to mute Chops during the games.
Yep, mute me outside of the games, mute Chop staring.
that's the secret to Cavs Twitter dumb.
Yep, we're dumb. That's who we are. It's okay.
Well, that's probably a good place to wrap it up. We'll have another show up soon. We'll be recording either late Monday or early Tuesday with Sam Esfandiari and Andy Liu from Warriors Twitter, which will surely be a showdown.
It's literally just going to be the four of us talking over each other whole time. We're going to just want to kill each other. It's going to be great.
You and Sam is going to be a lot because you guys love your own voice.
Sure do.
Okay. Well, we'll wrap this up now. So again, to all our listeners, thank you very much for all of your support, the great feedback you give us. Remember that you can subscribe on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. Leave a review, as it is the best way to help out the show. So until next time, go Cavs.